Hi, welcome to the Dr. Dreama Show, inspiration and practical strategy for achieving your dream life. I'm your host, Dr. Dreama. I'm a psychologist and life designer. I'm here to help you design the life you want and deserve. This is Dr. Dreama, and you know, the one thing that we all have to deal with every day is the fact that we have food in front of us. For most people, that's not necessarily a problem, right? But for some of us, it is a problem. Today, we are talking to my guest expert, Jenny Eden Burke. She's an eating psychology coach and a best-selling author. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm so excited to be here with you.
I know, this is so great, and this is fascinating because, you know, so many people say, yeah, you can give up alcohol if you have a problem with it, you can give up this if you have a problem with it, but I can't give up food. And you must know about this. Tell us about a little bit about this background of you being an eating psychology coach, and maybe share your story about how you got there.
Yeah, I would love to. And you're so right. You know, in the same, we can't address food challenges and concerns in the same ways that we do with other types of addictions or vices, because we need food to nourish ourselves. And therein lays the problem, because so many of us become fearful and confused with all the conflicting research out there about how the heck to nourish our bodies, right? So what I do is I really help people with clarity and trusting their intrinsic wisdom about how to nourish themselves and how to accept and even love the skin that they're in right now. I kind of took a windy path to this to get to where I am today. My background, I grew up in a very loving household. There weren't any like huge traumas to speak of. And yet, like many girls, I was indoctrinated into dieting culture at a very young age. My mom is also a chef. So the kinds of like after school snacks and meals that we had growing up was so spectacular. I started to really understand that food is love and celebration. And at the same time, I also got the message that it's important to be thin and it's important to diet and it's important to be in a smaller body and do whatever you need to do. And I think that those messages are pretty tacit. It wasn't like someone was blatantly being like, go on a diet, but these messages are very tacitly internalized into young girls very early on, based on what we see in our culture and the media, with our parents, with our peers. And, you know, I fell into that too. And, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, where there was a huge groundswell of dieting and Weight Watchers and Scarsdale diet and all these different things. So I very quickly became a chronic dieter. And what I mean by that is I was never happy with the size and shape I had naturally. I always was striving to be thinner, to eat better, to move differently. And it led me to be working at a national health and weight management company for 13 years, where my sole job was to facilitate classes and work one-on-one with people to lose weight. And it was often very aggressive weight loss. It was like 800 calories a day.
Oh.
And yeah, it was like really intense. And, you know, I always had a somewhat of a conflict with it, because deep down, I knew I was enough the way I was, and I didn't really want to subscribe to all this. But I also felt a tremendous amount of pressure to comport to these societal ideals. So I did whatever it took. I bullied my body. I restricted my calories. I overexercised. And about 10 years or 11 years into working at my job, I started to feel really guilty about the work that I was doing. And I started to wonder if I was really helping people or just putting like a salve on a wound. And that losing weight wasn't the only way or a way at all necessarily to be happy and to feel comfortable in your skin. And I was more intrigued with why people felt called to overeat in the first place and what traumas or a family history or what were some of the messages that people got to feel that they had to do this. And so it brought me, you know, onto this journey of learning about eating psychology. I went on to get my certificate from the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. And I left my job, I opened up my own practice, and I've never looked back because I feel so satisfied. It's very meaningful to me to get into some of the psychological and sociological and familial factors and even the genetic factors about why some of us are more called to overeat or binge eat or stress eat or emotionally eat than others.
That's so fascinating. You know, I think so many of us grew up in a family culture where the messages about food could sometimes be mixed. Like, you know, maybe you grew up with the clean plate club. Didn't matter if you liked it. Didn't matter if you were full. You were supposed to finish everything on your plate, right?
Exactly. Yes, I see that all the time. And it feels like food is a project rather than a joyful, like, you know, experience we get to have multiple times a day. It becomes this like either a project or it becomes something that we're fearful of because we worry about those effects of the food on our bodies and will it cause weight gain or will people judge us? And it becomes rather than just this like place of gratitude, like, oh, wow, I'm making this amazing meal for myself and I see it as an act of self-care. It ends up becoming this moral issue that leaves us with a lot of angst oftentimes.
That's so true. That's so true. You know, one of the biggest changes for me when I moved to France was having this daily market just blocks away. And, you know, the French, they don't go to the grocery store and load up for 3 weeks worth with processed food. It's about dailiness. It's about slowing down and enjoying the seasonal freshness. And so this was a big eye-opener for me because I realized that I truly had sort of moved past this idea of food has anything other than sustenance. Food here is very social and it's very, very much based on the seasons. And so I realized that I was sort of having to unlearn some of what I had learned about eating.
Yeah, I'm like smiling from ear to ear because this is what I saw when I lived, when I went to France. This is what I see in a lot of other countries where it's like a slow, you languish over a slow meal and socialize and no one's in a rush and you can really just enjoy the flavors and the nuances. And like you said, it's local, it's seasonable. And I think that's just a beautiful way to eat, you know, as juxtaposed to the American culture, which is often like, go, 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 eat while you're dining, eat while you're driving, eat while you're watching TV, you know, eat while standing up. And it was so such a nice contrast to what I saw growing up when I went to Europe and when I went to France specifically. So it's really nice that you get that.
Yeah, it really is. Now, let me ask you something. Does shame come up a lot in working with your clients?
Oh, yes. It's often the driving factor, shame about body, about their bodies, shame about, you know, what they're eating. In fact, people have so defined morality around food that it actually gets attributed to themselves. Meaning if someone chooses to eat a Twinkie as opposed to broccoli, they are literally shaming themselves and other people are shaming them in ways too. Like, and I always have to remind people, and you said unlearning, which is a really good word for it, that it's not food that has morality. Food is neutral. It's the story that we subscribe to that food that creates the morality. I mean, you know, just because there's a certain food has a different effect on your body or different consequences on your body does not make that food good or bad. And yet we see like there's like a big health halo on broccoli. And, you know, we often feel like the Twinkie just robbed a bank or something. It's so terrible. It's so bad, you know? and that ends up causing a lot of angst for people because we end up just throwing up our shoulders and being like, well, what should I eat then? Like, I don't know what to eat. And so a lot of what I do with people is helping them to learn how to intuitively eat again, as we did when we were babies and toddlers.
Uh-huh.
You look at a baby, they know exactly what they like and don't like. They know exactly how much to eat. You know, they'll turn their heads when they're done or throw their food on the floor.
Right.
You know? And it's the mom or dad. They're like, no, 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 you must still be hungry. So oftentimes we give our power away to external, like the clock or to somebody else or to the clean plate, you know, society in to the detriment of our own wisdom and our own sort of sense of efficacy within our own bodies. So like it leads to us not trusting our bodies. And then if we're not trusting our bodies, we're not really embodying our bodies in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Right, right. And we're not really being our authentic self either, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm giving up my power and going, oh, I shouldn't eat a Twinkie, but I really want a Twinkie, then I'm sort of basing what I let myself have off the external. Am I right?
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's the judgments that we, and the stories that we put on these foods that cause us sometimes to overeat, because it's very complex. Like sometimes we'll eat things out of rebellion. Maybe your mom always said like, well, don't eat that Twinkie. It's terrible for you. I never want you to eat that. Then all of a sudden that Twinkie becomes very alluring. It becomes like the forbidden fruit, you know? And so that's one of the reasons why we may gravitate towards that. The other reason is that, you know, as human beings, we have a proclivity towards sugar. I mean, it's ingrained in us from a evolutionary perspective. We needed to know which plants were poisonous and which ones weren't. And that's how we grew our taste for sugar. So we innately have a craving for sugar and also for survival. Also, if you think about what was the first food that you ever ate? It was either breast milk or formula, which is also sweet, you know?
Right,
and maybe your mom or caregiver was cuddling or cradling you while you were having that milk, or, you know, comforting you in some way. And then we begin to feel, oh, okay, sweet food equals comfort. And that comes along with us on our journey as we get older. And then we judge ourselves for it. You know, so I like to take the judgment away and the shame away from people, take that burden away.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny because as you were talking, I was reminded of the time in my life where I had this friend who was very controlling with her food intake. She had a very rigid set of what she couldn't eat. And one day she said something to me about what I was eating. And I said, you know, I feel like I eat pretty healthy. And she gasped and she said, Drema, I've seen you eat brie after 8 o'clock. Like, oh my God.
How dare you?
You know, I was just like, okay, I just can't go down that road with you. I'm not going to be ashamed of what I put in my mouth.
Good for you.
I'm careful about what I eat most of the time. And sometimes I'm going to go for something that I really want. I'm not going to eat it every day, but sometimes that is what I want. So, you know, what do you do with people who feel like they, like I think about groups of women in particular. We go out to a restaurant and maybe the waiter comes by and he's like, okay, dessert menus. And there's a collective gasp where the women are all saying, oh, I really shouldn't.
Yeah. I'm totally picturing that because, you know, what happens, we all have our menus out and we're all looking around the room, like who's going to be the courageous one to be like, heck yeah, I want ice cream, or heck yeah, I want dessert. And then everybody can like follow suit. And there's actually, I'm reading this great book right now called Why We Eat What We Eat. And there's a whole social component to it. So we often get influenced by what our peers or dining partners are doing. Meaning like if you are at that table, like let's say a big group of people and everyone's ordering the salad, you're likely not to order the fettuccine Alfredo, you know, like out of group shame or whatever it is. And that's very true. Like we'll often sort of acquiesce to what the group is doing with respect to food, or, you know, at parties, if people are, you know, celebrating and indulging, you're more likely to do that as well. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And you'd ask me a question about what to do in circumstances like that. And my belief is that if you have an abundance mindset when it comes to food, now remember, many of us have a scarcity mindset with food because we've dieted our whole lives and the diet starts Monday, or, you know, maybe someone took away your plate before you were really full, or maybe you had a fear that you weren't allowed to eat. You weren't allowed to eat to be sated. Then you're going to have an innate sort of need to eat more than what your body actually needs, because there's a fear that it'll be taken away or that it's not for you. But how I work with people is really to create an abundance mindset so that people over time can understand that no food is off the table. They can have anything they want whenever they want, and they can learn to trust themselves that they're going to make those choices when they feel called to eat it. Just like you said, you're not going to have that all the time, Brie. And you will be less likely to binge or overeat on a food if you don't feel like it's forbidden for you.
You know, I know that some of my listeners just gasped and went, what do you mean I should trust? What are you talking about? So for those people who aren't necessarily aligned with this idea of scarcity or an abundance mindset, can you break that down a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I guess the best way to really explain it is through my own personal journey. Like, I used to eat like spoonfuls of peanut butter. Why? Because it was so rare that I allowed myself to have peanut butter because I was constantly dieting. And peanut butter, I had always learned, was a food that causes weight gain. It's got a lot of fat in it. It's got a lot of calories and I should really restrict it. And for years, I would have this polarity of either not allowing myself to have it for months on end or ricocheting the other direction and having spoonfuls upon spoonfuls of it, feeling like I couldn't control myself. But when I started to adopt this abundance mindset, it really got into this idea that no, peanut butter is something I can have anytime I want. And I always have to remind myself of that. And when I'm comfortable and secure in that knowledge that I'm not going to have to restrict it, no one's taking it away, and I'm not taking it away, then I can relax around peanut butter. So that all of a sudden I have peanut butter if and only when I really feel called to eat it, which is far less frequently than what it was when I was restricting it. Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. It's sort of like me allowing myself to have brie occasionally because I know that I can trust myself around it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it's not something that I have to be restrictive around.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's really subtle, but it's really powerful. And it's all mindset work. It's all mantras, affirmations, reminders that, you know, no one's going to take this away from you. Your diet doesn't start Monday. You don't have to bully yourself anymore. And then all of a sudden your body gets into a relaxation response. Remember, restriction and dieting is a stress response on the body. So even just relaxing into food and trusting and communicating with your body in a deeper way can elicit the relaxation response, which will help you into really understanding your body cues and really honoring those cues with the foods that make you feel your best and help you thrive.
That's really cool. I imagine, given that you are a best-selling author, you have packed all of this information into your book.
Yes, I have actually. And this book is the book that I wrote is it's very personal, but it's also got a sociological slant and it also has a self-help slant. And it involves eating empowerment for sure, but it's also about ways to bring reverence to your body and your body image. So the book is about my own journey from dieting indoctrination and how I eventually got unshackled from it and learned to trust my body again. And I also interviewed over 60 people in this book, ranging from the ages 22 to 70. And it was remarkable, the stories that I heard and the ways that people have bullied their own bodies and not accepted the way they are, who they are, the way they eat, the way they move. And I really wanted to share those stories as a way for everyone to understand that there's a collective problem here of lacking a sense of self-worth that in our own physical selves, that instead of marveling in what our bodies can do, we obsess about how it looks. And that's what leads us on a path to disordered eating as well. So in this book, I share my story. I share the stories of 60 other people. And then I get into four body image healing realms that I go in, you know, specifically into step-by-step and strategies. And I've identified those realms as being a nutritional realm, physical realm, embodiment realm, and social realm. So it really was a act. This book was definitely a work in progress and an act of love.
Well, it sounds wonderful. Let me ask you this. If somebody listening is struggling with their body image, what is one tip that you could offer them?
So there's a lot of things that you can do, but the main thing is just to agree to be in your body. And that sounds maybe sort of silly, but it's embodiment. It's really saying, you know, I may not feel good right now. I may not be the weight I want to be. I may have some wrinkles. I may be aging, but my body has worth and dignity. And from that foundation, I'm going to honor this vessel that I have and really agree to be in it. You know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because a lot of times we end up desperately trying to change it. We end up, being distracted or dissociated from our bodies and not listening to it because we're not agreeing to be in it and we're judging it. Do you see what I mean? So That would be one of the biggest things that I would say is like, and you can do this through mindfulness work, meditation, body scans, mirror work. You know, there's sensuality techniques to really understand and feel the spectrum of how our bodies feel in different temperatures, with different textures on our skin. And all of it serves to just bring a sense of marveling of our bodies. Like, wow, I get to feel this. I get to do this. My body can do that. That's amazing. You know what I mean? And yes. moving from the exterior to really what the purpose of our bodies are for and how it serves us every day.
Yeah, I really like that because I know a lot of people do get stuck on their perceived flaws. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking in the mirror and I'm thinking, oh, I'm this or I'm that. We're not thinking, isn't it amazing that I'm in this vessel that allows me to walk down the street, that allows me to reach up, to hug, to be hugged, to kiss, all of these things that our bodies can do. And instead we're getting hung up on my thighs are too big.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that I believe keeps women and girls small from meeting their true potential. Because if we're too busy dieting and counting calories and weighing and obsessing about how we look, how on earth do we have time to write books and to give our gifts and to contribute to society at large and to love deeper and to live our rich, you know, fulfilling lives? It makes it much harder.
Exactly. And what is the name of your book, Jenny?
Yeah, it's called The Body Image Blueprint. It's available on Amazon and Kindle.
Oh, nice. The Body Image Blueprint. That sounds like a book worth getting.
Thank you.
So, Jenny, along your journey, one of the things that I like to ask my guest is about their failure. Because failure just means you tried something and it wasn't successful. It doesn't mean that you're a failure. It doesn't mean that you failed. So can you think of a time in your life where you were going forward and then you fell flat on your face? It just didn't work out the way that you planned. And now in retrospect, you might see it differently.
Oh yeah. I'm reminded of my huge breakdown moment when I finally was threw up my shoulders and I'm like, I'm not dieting anymore. And what happened was I was so frustrated after I turned 40, all the things that I used to do to lose weight wasn't working anymore. And I went to from doctor to healer to practitioner, like all these, like, help me, help me. And I finally went to go to see this doctor who told me I had massive inflammation and leaky gut and all this stuff. And I had to give up gluten. I had to give up dairy and tomatoes and peanuts and all these foods that I loved. And I was already a vegetarian. So it was like a year of struggle. And I did it because I was so obsessed with making sure that I could do everything I could to be smaller. And I remember one day I went to my neighborhood block party and there was like tons of pizza there. And I remember this breakdown moment where I was like, you know what? I just don't care. And I ate like almost an entire pizza. It was like all the gluten and dairy that I had lacked an entire year. And I felt like such a failure. I felt like, oh, see, I just can't do this. Here I go again. Why is this happening? But then it was actually really the moment when I realized I didn't have to do this anymore, that this was all crazy and that I could lead a very happy, healthy life without restriction and without constantly chastising myself for what I weigh and what I look like. And for me now, I see that as like a pivotal moment in my healing journey.
That's wonderful, you know? Because in that moment, you feel the sense of failure, and later you realized it was your moment of liberation.
Yes, yes. I'm getting chills as you say that, but that's so true. That's exactly how I felt.
That's wonderful. Jenny, thank you so much for being here. I really, this has been very enjoyable just listening to talking about these different things that we all, most of us have struggled with. If we're not struggling with it now, we've struggled with it at some time in the past. If somebody is interested in finding out more about you and your work, where can they find you?
Yes, thank you so much. The best place to find me is my website, which is www.jennyedencoaching.com.
Okay, super. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you taking the time, and I hope the weather is nice in Boston.
Oh, you know, we'll get there. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our time together too.
Me too. I've been talking with Jenny Eden Burke. She's a eating psychology coach and a best-selling author of The Body Image Blueprint. I love that name. Now, if you've struggled, if you know something about this struggle, then take a look at her and see what you can do, because You don't have to stay stuck. That's the deal. This is Dr. Drema. I welcome you to follow me on Facebook, Drema Dial, PhD. We'll talk soon.